1690 AM in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Nicole Celso. On Monday, January 27th, the Ministry of Education announced that the funding for the success of immigrants and the educational success of Indigenous students have been put on hold. Last December, the Ministry asked the Directors General of the School Service Centers to cut 15 measures from the budget rules of 2024 and 2025. It included youth climate change projects and introduction of parliamentary democracy to high school students. Nicolas Prévost, President of the Fédération Québécoise de Direction d'Établissement d'Enseignement, disagrees with this decision. He stated that due to the on-hold funding support, certain schools with projects to promote Quebec culture won't be able to open this year. In an interview with CTV News back in November, the Auditor General of Quebec, Guylaine Leclerc, criticized the lack of support for Indigenous students. According to Guylaine, the Ministry of Education is not offering Indigenous students enough assistance to promote their success. Premier François Legault said that he never wanted to make these cuts. He also said that it is up to the school service centers to handle budgets properly. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration fired more than 10 Justice Department lawyers who worked on two criminal investigations against him. They were dismissed after acting U.S. Attorney General James McHenry said that the officials could not be trusted to faithfully enact the president's agenda because of the role they played in his prosecution. According to a copy of the termination letter seen by Reuters, McHenry justified the firings by citing Trump's power as chief executive under the Constitution. Special counsel Jack Smith, who brought forward two cases accusing Trump of national security and election-related crimes, has now dropped the charges to avoid prosecuting a sitting president. Earlier this month, Smith resigned from the department. The longtime public corruption and national security prosecutors who worked on Smith's cases remain in the department after Smith closed his investigation earlier this month. On Wednesday, January 29th, at around 9 p.m. Eastern Time, a jet carrying 60 passengers and four crew members collided with a military helicopter mid-air near Reagan Washington National Airport. The U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter had three people on board. Around 300 responders moved to the Potomac River near the airport and arrived at the scene with inflatable rescue boats and light towers to brighten the site of the collision. However, in a press conference on Thursday morning, Chief of Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS Department, John Donnelly, said that the responders are now switching to a recovery mission. Donnelly said that they do not believe there are any survivors. Among the passengers on board were 14 figure skaters with their coaches and families. The flight was coming from Wichita, Kansas, where a development camp was held after the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. So far, the bodies of 27 passengers have been recovered by first responders. Investigations are still ongoing. This collision marks the first fatal U.S. jet crash since 2009. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Cut the collar on my neck. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. It is officially Super Bowl week, the Super Bowl on Sunday, and we got a hell of a game and a rematch of 2 years ago between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs. So obviously we'll spend a ton of time on that. We'll get into those two hectic trades in the NBA over the weekend, especially the Luka Doncic to LA one, Anthony Davis to Dallas, which maybe the most surprising trade I've ever seen in the NBA. No one knew they were available, especially Luka Doncic, a superstar at 25 years of age, just was in the NBA Finals a year ago, and Dallas decides to part ways. We'll get into that, of course, and a big UFC card coming up in this weekend, so we'll get into that as well. Just mayhem. We all knew the Super Bowl. We were going to talk about it, but I didn't think we'd be leading the show with maybe the biggest NBA trade in some time, probably maybe since Shaq to the Lakers from Orlando. It is that big of a trade. Luka Doncic, who at the age of 25 is already a five-time All-NBA player, has been to the All-Star game every year in his career, led a Mavs team that wasn't that talented to the West Finals when he was 23, led the Mavs to the finals last year at 25, is now a Los Angeles Laker, which does not make any sense at all. And when you hear the reasons why from the Dallas Mavericks, it makes you scratch your head. They're like, oh, he doesn't come in shape. He doesn't. That's not what they're saying, obviously. They're just like, want to go in another direction. But that's all the reports from Shams, from Brian Windhorst. They're all saying the same thing. Hey, they don't think he's committed and all those other things. If he's not committed and he's dropping 28 points a game, what do you think he's going to do now that he's ticked off that Dallas didn't want him? And unfortunately, as a Celtics fan, I'm on the top of the NBA world. The Lakers are in the dumps. Now they just get Luka Doncic. And it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And with maybe even crazier, okay, Dallas, you want to part ways with Luka Doncic. You don't want to do it with him. You don't want to give him that huge extension he's going to get next year. Why don't you shop him? Why don't you just promote to the rest of the NBA that we have maybe a top three player in the world entering his prime, and we don't want anything to do with him anymore? Why don't you shop him? Because the entire NBA world was stunned, absolutely stunned, that Luka Doncic got traded. We all saw Kevin Durant on the bench freaking out at the trade announcement. We saw Steph Curry and all these other players had no clues getting traded. And LeBron James, who plays for the Lakers, who was exceptional on Saturday night at MSG in New York, had no clue Anthony Davis was getting traded for Luka Doncic. None. And I credit the Lakers. They'd be foolish not to do this. Yes, Anthony Davis is an all-time great player. He's won a championship, but he's 31 and he's had crazy health issues recently. Crazy. So you move on from him and you get Luka Doncic, and they had nothing left after the LeBron era. They had LeBron, Anthony Davis. They gave up all their young players to get Anthony Davis. LeBron wants to go in 100 times. They bring in Westbrook. They bring in all these different people. D'Angelo Russell. None of it works. And they were basically on a 2-year window. LeBron's 40, Anthony Davis is 31. They had 2 years to win another championship, and then it would be a crazy rebuild. Now, they go get Luka Doncic, and they can build this team for the next 10 years. And what's even crazier is the return. Anthony Davis and a first-round pick. Anthony Davis and a first-round pick. Just look through the history of what other NBA players. Look what the Knicks had to give up for Bridges. Wasn't it like 4 first-round picks? Look at what the Clippers had to give up for Paul George all those years ago. It set up the Thunder to what they are now. And these guys are nowhere near as good as players of Luka Doncic, and they were older. Like, what are we doing here? This is absolutely crazy. And okay, if Dallas wants to part ways, maybe there was the owner, new ownership didn't want to give him the huge contract. I don't know what it is. But to not promote the fact that you're going to trade him to just get more in return and basically get a bidding war between most teams in the NBA is crazy. And the only other theory I would have is that Luka was saying, I want to go to the Lakers. I have to go to the Lakers. But Apparently, he didn't even request a trade. He didn't even want out of Dallas. And he was blindsided as well. So I don't know what the hell happened. Hopefully, we find out more. But that is one of the most surprising trades I've ever seen in all sports. I can't even remember one that is remotely close. On Saturday night, just chilling. And then you first think Shams is hacked when you see Luka Doncic to the Lakers, Anthony Davis, and like zero return back. What's this? Clearly, he got hacked. We've seen people get hacked before. No, and then he had to put out, this is real. Shams, this is real. But then that made me suspicious even more. Well, clearly the guy just wants to get people, you know, going. Then you go on Instagram and Facebook, and it's everywhere, the trade. And then I put on the TV, nope, confirmed. It makes absolutely no sense. Now, are the Mavs still a good team? Yes. They have Kyrie Irving. They have other pieces. Jason Kidd's a great coach. They bring in Anthony Davis, who at 31 is still a borderline top 10 player, so they will be competitive this year. But Luka Doncic is a superstar, right now a better player than Anthony Davis, not even 26 years of age, wanting to be a Dallas Maverick, who took you to the finals a year ago. And as good as Oklahoma City has been, Dallas has had their number recently in the regular season, and I believe they knocked him out of the playoffs last year. And you trade him. So now you do have Kyrie Irving, you do have Anthony Davis, which is a very good duo, but they're both in their 30s. And it's a very weird situation. And as of right now, I don't understand it, and I don't understand why in the hell you didn't promote that you're going to trade Luka Doncic. If you made up your mind you're trading him, then leak it. Tell everyone, get a bidding war, because you can get far more in return. Far more. Unless they're so obsessed with Anthony Davis, which doesn't make any sense. Maybe they wanted the 1 year, they want to get better defensively. Okay, there's a lot of good young defensive players. A lot. And you could get a bunch more picks and build the team for the future. But as of right now, for the long term, I even the short term, I just don't understand it. I really, really don't. I'm trying to find an angle in which I give the Mavs credit. I just can't do it right now. Are they going to be fine for the rest of the year? Probably. But they got older, and their championship window got a lot shorter. Could they make a run for a title this year? Of course. Anthony Davis, 31, 32 years of age? Of course. Kyrie Irving in his early 30s. But once we get to 2026, 2027... and those guys are in their mid to late 30s. And you look at LA and they're going to have Luka Doncic in his prime. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. If you look at the Lakers now, it's going to be a weird mix for the next few months. LeBron and Luka play similar style of basketball. Austin Reeves is emerging as a very good player. But they don't really have much defense. But there's still time before the deadline to address the front court and defense. But who cares? Because every team would make this trade. You got younger and a team that had nothing going for them. No elite talent at all after LeBron and Anthony Davis leave. They get Luka Doncic, who, if you poll GMs, would be a top three player you would build your team around for the next 5 years. And they got him. The Lakers always get him. They got Wilt Chamberlain. They got Kareem, Magic Johnson. They got Shaq in a crazy trade. They luck out, got Paul Gasol and maybe the biggest fleece of all time in the late 2000s to win two championships. Then they sign LeBron James. They get Anthony Davis. And if you look at it now, they turned Lonzo Ball, who was at Ingram, and Josh Hart and a few picks to Anthony Davis. And then they flip Anthony Davis after they win a title with him for Luka Doncic. That's pretty remarkable. I just cannot believe he didn't go for that. Considering in the NBA in 2025, what players get paid and what players go for on the market in trade deals, I just cannot believe that's all he went for. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And to think that wasn't the only big trade in the NBA this weekend. We had De'Aaron Fox going from Sacramento to San Antonio. And that's a very good trade as well. Victor Wembanyama is outrageously good at his age. They go get him a superstar to play with him. That's a very good trade. And listen, the Bulls, the Bulls and the Kings are just dreadful. They needed as much assets as they could. They get picks, few players. Okay. But that's a big pickup for San Antonio, who's trying to bring out the best of Wembanyama. Just a crazy weekend in the NBA. But that Luka Doncic trade, I will never understand from Dallas's point of view. They might win a championship with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving. Who knows? But you traded a superstar at 25 years of age. And even if the report is he doesn't take his body, doesn't take care of his body, still. So he doesn't take care of his body at 25, and he's still a top three player in the league. And you don't think this is going to motivate him? Really? He's going to be in the best shape of his life for the next 2 years with the Lakers. Crazy. Now we'll transition to the NFL because it is Super Bowl weekend, the biggest weekend of football, or week, I should say. And we have Kansas City going for the three-peat, and we have the Eagles going for revenge, they like to call it, revenge. And I told you guys last week, it's a 50-50 ball game. You look at the roster, it's the Eagles 10 times out of 10. They have a better offensive line. They have the best running back in the sport. Very good defense. That front is unbelievable with Jalen Carter, Zach Bond, all these guys. The linebackers, the defensive linemen are crazy. And then the secondary that got shredded last year went and got Cooper DeJean in the draft, got that kid Mitchell from Toledo, who's already a top 10 corner in the league. Darius Slay's played well. And Vic Fangio, what a pickup for him to be defensive coordinator. He has done wonders. So you look on paper, the Eagles are probably the more talented team, far more talented team. They have A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, all these weapons to throw to. But I'll say it again. The two most important positions on a football team are the quarterback and the head coach. And that's where the Chiefs have a real advantage. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes versus Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts. And I like Jalen Hurts. I like Nick Sirianni. And Hurts played pretty well in the NFC Championship. But you can ask a million people who watch the NFL. Gun to their head, would you rather have Andy Reid or Nick Sirianni? They'll all take Andy Reid. Would you rather have Mahomes or Jalen Hurts? Everyone's going to take Mahomes. So they're going to have the play-calling edge. Kellen Moore's a good coordinator. And I just told you how good Vic Fangio is. So the Eagles are 1,000% capable of winning this football game. And the line shows it. What is it, minus one Kansas City? It's pretty much a pick 'em because the roster's so good. But quarterback, head coach, you have to favor the Chiefs. But the real problem for Kansas City would be is that offensive line. They got Joe Tooney, former Patriot, by the way, playing left tackle, and he's usually a guard center. So if they're the Eagles, you try and get pressure on Mahomes and make his life hell. We all saw that Super Bowl a few years ago against Tampa Bay, had no offensive line, and he looked very pedestrian. And that's when he had a prime Tyreek Hill, prime Travis Kelce. Looked very pedestrian. So if you're the Eagles, your number one assignment, get pressure on Mahomes. If you don't get pressure, oh boy. Because the offense looked good last week. Hollywood Brown, I know he had some boneheaded plays. He could show you his game-breaking separation. Juju Smith-Schuster, who everyone wrote off, he got cut by the Patriots. He caught two balls for 60 yards. He was effective. And we know what Travis Kelce brings at the biggest games. He's going to be on his game 24-7 in the Super Bowl, in the divisional round, in the championship games. That's just what he is. Regular season, okay. The last few years, he's getting old. He's in his mid-30s. But we all saw what he's capable of against Houston. And we all saw what he was capable of last year in the AFC Championship against the Ravens. If the Eagles do not double Kelce, I don't know what to tell. Buffalo did a pretty good job. Honestly, they did a pretty good job. The Eagles need to cover Kelce, and they have to get pressure on the quarterback. And if you're the Eagles on offense, listen, you got to roll with Saquon again. We've seen the Niners, we've seen Buffalo, we've seen teams in big games, Houston a few weeks ago, run the ball pretty well against the Chiefs. With not as good as offensive lines and not as good as running backs as Saquon Barkley, let's be honest. James Cook's very good. Joe Mixon's very good. There ain't Saquon Barkley, who has the best offensive line in the sport. So if they just rely on that run game, if they give the ball to Saquon 30 times, he's going to break a big run once or twice. You just know it's going to happen. It happens every game. Happened against Washington. Happened against the Rams. Happened against the Packers. It happens every game. You just keep on feeding Saquon. He's going to break one, possibly two. And that's got to be the game plan. If Saquon runs the ball well, then yes, you can use it play action with Jalen Hurts and get A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert the ball. It's just an outrageous amount of weapons they have. So if they can get the ground game going, it's going to be almost impossible to stop this offense. Ask Washington. They allowed 50-something points. It's not an easy assignment. But Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense in big games, man, have they stepped up. Let's be honest. The last few years, this Chiefs defense has been the stronger side of the ball. The Chiefs this year didn't score 30 until last weekend against Buffalo. And they were, what, 15-2 in the regular season? 15-1 when Mahomes plays? So, credit that defense. Chris Jones is a Hall of Famer. McDuffie, what a corner he is. Karloftis. They've got players all over the place. So, after the break, I'll give you my pick. And I'm still not sure. I'm still 50-50. But it's going to be a great game. The Eagles getting off the plane yesterday, they looked like they were all business. Let's see. My fear is that Nick Sirianni gets in the way. That's my fear. If he just stays out of the way, let's give Saquon Barkley the ball. And if it's succeeding, do some play action off that, they're going to be fine. But they cannot let Jalen Hurts just drop back and pass. That is not a recipe for success at all. They're going to have to bully the Chiefs up front, and they're going to have to get that run game going. If they do that and get a few timely stops on defense, that's pretty much all they need. But the problem is you're going against one of the great quarterbacks of all time in Patrick Mahomes and one of the great coaches of all time in Andy Reid. So tough assignment, yes. But why can't they do it? They have been one of the best teams all year and probably the most talented team in the NFL. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk a bit more about the Super Bowl, give you my picks and maybe my MVP picks too for the game. I have a few players I'm jotting down. It's easy to say Mahomes, easy to say Hurts, Barkley. But if you look down on the betting odds, there's some key players who are at like 50-1, 60-1, some guys I would look out for. So we'll do that, and then we'll preview the big UFC card and huge news in boxing with two of the sport's biggest stars agreeing to a fight in September. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Mark your calendars for an exciting new event from Crossover Comics. Award-winning comic book author Ryan North will be launching his new book, Marvel Comics, One World Under Doom, Number One. You may know Ryan North from many of his other works, including The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Danger, and Other Unknown Risks, and The Adventure Time and Star Trek Lower Decks comics, not to mention the legendary Dinosaur comics. The event will take place on February 12th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Crossover Comics, located at 3560 Rue Notre-Dame West in Saint-Henri. Fans will also have the opportunity to meet the author, get their comics and books signed, and have a chat with him about his work. For more information, visit us in store or contact us at 514-284-7373.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms, whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with Bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. So yes, we got Super Bowl Sunday a few days away. And what's underrated too in the city of Montreal is that on Super Bowl weekend, the Habs play at what, 1 o'clock both days? That was a bad loss to Anaheim yesterday. My goodness, that's just craziness. They were on a all-time heater for Montreal Canadiens standards, and then They've hit a wall, clearly. That's five losses in a row by the Montreal Canadiens. 3-2. They were up early in that hockey game, too, up 2-0. And Anaheim just kept plugging away, and they end up winning that one in regulation 3-2. And if they want to catch the Bostons of the world, the Torontos of the world, Florida, Tampa Bay, those teams in the playoffs right now in the Atlantic, then it has to start now. You cannot lose five games in a row. You have San Jose coming up. Like, let's go, Montreal. If you want to be taken seriously, I know it's the rebuild, and no one expects them to be fighting for the playoffs anyway, but you just don't want to get close and lose 10 in a row. You just can't do it. You know, that's something the Sabres would do. Montreal, come on. If we want to get out of the rut, you got to win some games here. They got San Jose and L.A. And then, like I mentioned, on Super Bowl weekend, the 2 1 o'clock games, they host the Devils, and then they host the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is a huge game, both at 1 o'clock. And then, this is really what's crunch time. You play Ottawa, who's in a playoff spot. You play Carolina, who's in a playoff spot after that. Then you get Buffalo twice. Those are games you have to win. If you want to close ground on the Tampas, on the Floridas, the Torontos, Ottawa, Detroit won yesterday in Vancouver. I mean, you have games in hand, but you got to win those games in hand. I know Boston's played 54 games. Florida's played 54 games. Okay. But those game in hands mean nothing if you don't win them. So Montreal, big stretch coming up. Five losses in a row is just a killer. The real surprise of the NHL has to be the Washington Capitals. I know they've lost two in a row, but no one had them leading the way. 75 points, 34, 11, and 7. Ovi getting more goals on the weekend. He's under 20 away from Wayne Gretzky. So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when Alex Ovechkin will be the all-time leading scorer in the National Hockey League. Quickly to the Western Conference, the Winnipeg Jets, all they do is win hockey games. Saw them on Tuesday in Montreal. They looked sensational. They were flat in the first, but then Kyle Connor and Scheifele, what a duo. They took over that hockey game. And Connor Hellebuck's got to be in the MVP conversation. I know McKinnon, Draisaitl, but if you have a goalie leading every statistical category on the best team in the league, you're going to get some love. He pretty much has the Vezina locked up right now. Six in a row for the Winnipeg Jets, which is unbelievable. The Dallas Stars, though, not going away. They have two games in hand, and they've won five in a row. Getting Granlund over the weekend from San Jose. They're bulking up that roster. And you looked at the Pacific. There's no really, I mean, Edmonton on paper is the best team, but they've kind of fallen off a bit. They've lost two in a row. The Golden Knights have lost three in a row. They're 2-5-3 in their last 10. But if you're looking at a team in the Western Conference, it's just hard not to look at Winnipeg and Dallas. Like, if we're being honest, those are the two teams to look at. And also, I know we briefly mentioned last week the Mikko Rantanen deal from Colorado to Carolina. Nikas is fitting just fine on Colorado. McKinnon and Makar, I mean, you have those two, you're going to be fine. And they did not want to commit long-term to Rantanen at that number. They've seen what's happened in Toronto. When you pay guys in the NHL, which is a hard cap league, you got 20-something guys on the roster. You cannot give McKinnon 12.5 with Makar coming in 2 years, who's the best defenseman in the world. Give him, what, 12.5, 13, and then expect Rantanen to be the same? And I know the cap's going up, but that's not how you build a winning hockey team. Ask Toronto. They've had guys, four guys, making 11-plus million bucks last few years. And it'll get you to the playoffs, but then once you get to the postseason, if you lack on the defensive end, if you don't have depth, you're not going anywhere. So I credit Colorado. They made an aggressive move. They got a very good player in Martin Nikas. Got other picks as well. So the NHL is really coming into form. We got the Four Nations coming up with Canada, U.S., Sweden, Finland. And that's going to be awesome hockey. We'll get into that next weekend, though. We got the Super Bowl and big fights coming up in the UFC and boxing. So quickly on the Super Bowl. Gun to my head. You'd be foolish not to pick Kansas City. I really believe that. Even as a guy, I'm a bit chiefed out. They've been in the Super Bowl every damn year now. And I can't really say anything as a Patriots fan. You know, it was like that for us. We were literally in the Super Bowl every year, it felt like. So I know people don't want to hear it from me that I'm tired of a team being in the Super Bowl. But let's be honest. You want new. Everyone was rooting for Buffalo. People were rooting for Washington. We just want a different matchup. But here we are again. Are the Eagles a better team on paper than they were a few years ago? I do think so. I really do. But Jalen Hurts is not playing nearly as well as he was. If you put a gun to my head, I'm going to pick the Chiefs just because I feel like it's foolish not to. But it's really close. It is a 50-50 game. I'll be rooting for Philadelphia. Let's get some new champs in there. Three in a row seems crazy. Let's get a new champ in there. I'll be rooting like hell for the Eagles. I'm not even an Eagles guy. Some of the fans are a bit obnoxious. I'm not an Eagles guy. But here we are. We only have two options, and I don't want the Chiefs to win. But I fear they might. I fear they might. So, my gun to my head, I'm going to pick Kansas City in a very good game. Let's go 27-24. I'll go 27-24. But I'll be rooting like hell for the Eagles. I hope it's 50-0 Philadelphia. I hope I'm wrong. But I've seen Mahomes in big games. I've seen Andy Reid in big games. I've seen Travis Kelce. I've seen Steve Spagnuolo call perfect blitzes at the perfect time. This is just my gun to head right now, a week out from the game. But I pray to God that Jalen Carter gets home, that Zach Bond gets home, maybe a pick or two by the young secondary, and the Eagles win this game 50-0. That's what I'm hoping. But I'll be foolish. I feel like it's foolish right now not to pick. I'd be happy to be wrong on the Chiefs. If I pick the Chiefs and they lose, so be it. It's like you pick against the Patriots and they lose, so be it. Don't hold that against anyone if you pick the Chiefs. I'm picking them, but I hope to hell I'm wrong. I really do. I just think they get the run game going with Pacheco and Hunt, and then they always find a way, Kansas City, to stay ahead of the sticks. It's always second and five, third and three. They never have the long third downs. If they can force the Chiefs into third and long situations, get the pass rush home, and then the offensive line gets antsy, a few false starts, that would be huge for Philadelphia. And I'm rooting for them. Can't believe I'm saying this, but go Birds. But I just can't, right now in 2025, cannot pick against the Chiefs of what I've seen. I just can't do it. Hope I'm wrong. We have a special guest today. We have a new aspiring radio guy, and we got Connor Rooney here, who's a wrestler, right? High school, college? Can we?
Both.
So, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Huge MMA guy, huge boxing guy. And if this was, a few months ago, I feel like, there's not many big fights coming up. But thankfully for us, we're entering the spring, and we got huge fights coming, especially this weekend. UFC, what we got now? We're up to 300 and something. Between Du Plessis and Sean Strickland. And this is the second time they fought. UFC 312. Dricus Du Plessis, the champion, 22-2 record. He's won 10 fights in a row, which is remarkable, against Sean Strickland. So this fight's happened before. We've seen it. It was a razor-close finish. The scorecards, it could have went either way. I think we were talking before the show. We both thought Strickland won the fight, but they gave it to Du Plessis. Wasn't a crazy robbery, but we both thought Sean did enough to win the fight. What do you expect coming up between these two guys? The number one contender, Sean Strickland, the former champion, and the current champion, Dricus Du Plessis, meeting February 9th in Australia. What do you like, Connor? What do you think their key matchups going into the big fight this weekend?
Well, it's all going to come down to if Sean Strickland could improve his takedown defense, because that's what it came down to.
In the first fight, was all about the takedown defense. Du Plessis got him to the ground. I thought Sean put on a masterclass on the feet, really beat him up. But I think what gave Du Plessis the edge at the end of the day, he got him to the ground quite a few times. He did absolutely nothing on the ground. It was just hugging. But he did get him down. It just, a very unimpressive way. Like, Du Plessis's got this like backyard wrestling style, but it works, which has always surprised me. He's gone up against really good wrestlers, like in the Robert Whittaker fight. Whittaker is a great wrestler, but he was getting taken down by Du Plessis' backyard wrestling. Kind of just dives for the ankles.
Mm-hmm.
I've never understood how it works. Even his striking, it doesn't look smooth.
No, it's almost like a curveball or a knuckleball. Like when you see it, like you think you're getting something. It's a changeup watching him fight. It's unorthodox. I've never seen anything like him fighting. It's like even Rogan and Daniel Cormier, when they watch him fight, they're like, it's hard to know what he's doing because he's just, you don't know what's coming. His punches come from different angles. He's not like a Charles Oliveira guy who's just perfect technique. You know what you're getting. This guy's all over the map. But it works for him. He's a big body. He's big for the division, right? At his size, yeah. I would assume. But who do you like in the fight? I know Duplessis got the razor close to finish, but he maybe, I don't know Sean how Sean Strickland mind works. I don't think anyone knows. But do you think having won the first fight, he has a little mental edge over Sean Strickland? Maybe?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Especially when you look at how his last fight went against Adesanya. Everybody counted him out. Fraud champion. Adesanya's going to set things straight again. Mm-hmm. And then he chokes him out. No, I would have never put that on my parlay to have Duplessis choking out Adesanya, especially when you consider how good of a striker Adesanya is in theory compared to Duplessis. To have Duplessis have knocked him to the ground and then take his neck was, that's ridiculous. And then you compare Sean Strickland's last match, close barn burner with Paulo Costa. Mm-hmm. Those are the two mentalities. One guy just submitted a guy he had no business submitting, and the other guy had a pretty rough match against Paulo Costa. Came out with the victory, but that one, a lot of people also were saying Paulo might have had the edge there. I thought Strickland had it, but based on their last fights, I think Duplessis got a lot more confidence. And even just fight mentality. As someone who's been in a lot of close fights, when you don't get the win, especially if you think you deserve to or thought you should have.
Yeah, it messes with you.
You take that home. Mm-hmm. You take that home. And I guess there's two different ways. You can either do like the Rocky sort of three mentality where you start grinding at it and use it as your motivation. But there's also just this, I don't know, it's just like a... It's like an exhale. Like I thought I did it, and I just didn't. I don't know what I'm going to
do. The one I think of when you bring that up, I remember when Max Holloway fought Volkanovski the second time, and I'm a big Volk guy. I love Volkanovski. I thought Max Holloway won the fight. It was during COVID. I thought he clearly won the fight. Volkanovski gets a decision, and then they fought a third time because everyone in their minds thought it was 1-1, and Volkanovski just ran through him like it wasn't even a fight. So I'm not saying that's going to happen now, but you are so right. If a close decision and you don't get it, it just kind of mentally, with a lot of fighters, not all fighters, there's the elite ones like George St. Pierre and others who just find a way, are mentally stronger. But this is a big test for Sean Strickland. We haven't seen him, you know, in this situation. No one expected him to win the title in the first place when he won it against Adesanya. Now he's going for it again, different expectations. I think it's going to be a great fight. But right now, if you were to pick the winner of the fight, who are you leaning right now as we sit a few days out?
This is so close to call. It's going to come down to, did Sean grapple in training? Mm-hmm. Did he work on his... And he wouldn't have to work that hard because I don't think Duplessis is that good of a wrestler. He just somehow makes it happen. Mm-hmm. But if Strickland grappled and he got that under control, I think it's an easy win for Strickland. But if he didn't, I'm going Duplessis all the way. Duplessis got the X factor. Mm-hmm. He just pulls wins out of thin air on ridiculousness at the end of the day.
He's just a very awkward fighter is what it is,
yeah.
Right?
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, and he goes up against guys that are world-class, smooth, super pretty at what they do, whether it be wrestling or striking, and he beats them with his backyard style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a matchup. The first fight, even though the decision was a bit murky, it was still a great fight. It was highly entertaining. It was in Toronto, too, which I remember, and I was stoked that a card was back in Canada, and now they're fighting once again. What do you think happens after this fight? If Duplessis wins, that's 2-0, it's kind of hard to revisit that fight. What do you see for Dracus Duplessis if he gets through Sean Strickland? Who does he face at 185? Is there any chance he would go up to 205, or is that just crazy?
There's zero chance.
Zero chance?
He's going to fight Pereira?
Yeah, I mean...
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That fight will never happen. Duplessis is smarter than that.
Yeah.
No. It's a very obvious choice, and this goes for whoever wins that match. It's the boogeyman of the division. People have been waiting for this guy to reach a title fight for years now. That's Khamzat Chimaev.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other candidate. He's run through just about every opponent he's fought, with the exception of Gilbert Burns and Usman.
Yeah.
I won't lie. After the Usman fight, I was calling fraud. I didn't think Chimaev was all he was cut out to be.
Right.
But, I mean, after watching him just run over Robert Whittaker, like no one else has ever run him over, it's impossible not to give him the next shot.
And undefeated. And when the Khamzat thing was really coming on, he was fighting all the damn time. It was like, oh, there's this guy finishing people in like the first round. And then he's had injuries and the flu bug and all that kind of thing. He hasn't fought as much. But he's still always been there. But you're right, he's never gotten the title shot. You think after Robert Whittaker, even though he lost those fights to Adesanya and he lost the fight to Duplessis, he still had very good wins in post being a champion. So getting that win for Khamzat was huge. Do you think that made a statement the rest of the division that, okay, maybe, yeah, it was tough against Burns, tough against Usman, but he's the real deal?
Absolutely. Well, what it really did, it legitimized him completely, because you look at his highlight reel back when he was picking up guys, walking them over to Dana White and having a conversation. That's cool, but you fought a tomato can.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it wasn't a top-ranked guy. Doing what he did to Whittaker that's just so impressive. You can't ignore something like that. This isn't, oh, it's cool, but he did it against a tomato can. No, yeah. No, that's Robert Whittaker, former champion, always puts on great fights. Whittaker was coming off a knockout win. Everyone was thinking, oh, maybe he's back. Maybe he's back. Nope. Hamza almost took his jaw off.
It's remarkable how talented he is. If there's one thing for Khamzat, I think, is can he stay healthy? Because I've never seen a guy. He fought all the damn time, and in the last few years, that's the only thing that stopped him is just not fighting because of injuries and flus. Am I crazy, or feel like he used to fight during COVID, 2021, 2022? I felt like all I was seeing is Khamzat just piling up wins. Like you mentioned, picking up fighters, walking to the Dana White. But the last few years, the injury bug has kind of bit him a bit.
It did, but that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. Especially, he's a wrestling style.
Yeah.
That's a lot of injuries come with that in that sport. It's not a really light sparring in wrestling. You just go at it, and you're going to tear a ligament every now and again.
Yeah.
It's just the reality of the game. And it's also because his fights, dude, at one point it was a crazy stat. Like, he had like one strike thrown at him in like three fights.
It was ridiculous.
It was just insane. Like, he wasn't getting hit.
Yeah.
So of course you could fight up like 3-4 times a year when you're taking like two little jabs to the head per fight.
Right.
I mean, you could fight every weekend if you kept that
up.
But you look at his last few fights, especially the Gilbert Burns fight.
Was remarkable.
He was getting touched bad in that fight. He tried to keep it on the feet to show that he could strike, but he definitely paid for that in blood.
Yeah.
Usman, he got hit pretty hard in that. Great first round against Kamaru Usman. But then a really bad third round and a second round that could have gone either way. I think if that's five rounds, Usman beats him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Usman off the couch.
Yep.
On a week's notice, fighting a weight class up.
Yep.
So that's where I was kind of calling fraud, and that's why I think he had to slow down a bit. His cardio wasn't where it needed to be. He was getting hit a lot more often, and you can't fight as much when that's happening.
So I'll flip the result of the fight on you now. So this is, if Duplessis wins, has to be Khamzat. If Sean Strickland wins, do we do the trilogy? Or is the Khamzat fight too big? He's too big of a star. What does Dana White and the UFC do there? If it's Sean Strickland winning it was a close fight, we thought he won. But if he wins that one, does the public think it's 2-0? In reality, it's 1-1? Or, hey, we just do the Duplessis fight again and do the trilogy?
They're not going to do a trilogy. They barely gave it to Strickland this title match.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted Chimaev, and they wanted him. They want him now.
Yeah.
There's no way they're going to pass on that. They'll probably give Duplessis Imavov. Would be my guess.
Oh, man. Who looked pretty darn good this weekend.
Everybody slept on him. I thought they were just feeding Adesanya another shot at the title.
Yeah.
They seem to love giving him title shots.
Yep.
But no. It's definitely going to be Chimaev. And, I mean, Chimaev will run over Sean Strickland. And I love him as Sean Strickland, one of my favorite fighters in the UFC. Chimaev is probably the worst guy for him stylistically in the whole division.
Right.
I mean, there's preparing for backyard wrestling with Duplessis, and then there's Chimaev.
Yes.
One of the best wrestlers in the organization right now.
Mm-hmm.
No one seems to be able to figure. He was picking up Kamaru Usman up over his shoulder like he was cradling a baby.
Yeah.
Usman is a world-renowned wrestler. He's one of the, when you think of the top best wrestlers in the UFC 2 years ago, Usman was, if not the best, one of the best.
Right.
Just Chimaev just over his shoulder, whatever, in the first round of that fight. I mean, Strickland has no chance against Chimaev because he's not just going to cuddle him on the ground like Duplessis did. He's going to bash his head in effectively.
Right. Right. You're essentially right there. Where does it Israel Adesanya go from here? The big, if you missed it over the weekend, Israel Adesanya, former champion, a huge star in the UFC, gets knocked out against Imavov.
Yeah.
Where does he go from here? He's a huge star. He's made a boatload of money. He got his revenge against Pereira all those years ago. Do you see him taking a long break, or do you see him trying to hop back in the octagon as soon as possible?
He just took a long break. So I don't know why he would do that again. You know,
right.
At this point, you took your break. It didn't work. I mean, are you going to do it again? I doubt it. He's got a few options. One option is the golf course, which might be his best.
Yeah,
just
hang him up.
I mean, at this point, you've got a great career. You're a future Hall of Famer. Don't do that thing that fighters love to do where the glory days are gone. You're just going to hang in the pocket, go the way of Tony Ferguson. Just loss after loss. And I mean,
BJ Penn was my guy early on, and he was a legend. And at the end, he was just a punching bag for young contenders.
Yeah.
And you don't, I know Izzy, a lot of people love Izzy, a lot of people hate Izzy. You just don't want to see a guy who was so dominant for a long time, like Tony Ferguson, just end their career just losing 5, 6, 7 in a row.
I don't know. They're just going to use your name to promote the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, you're out of it. The few options he could take, if he really wants to keep fighting, would be the GFL, the new MMA league for sort of older competitors. That's where Ferguson ended up, all these guys. He would do great over there.
Yep.
He would do fantastic. And he'd definitely get bigger fights over there, because the way it's going now, I don't even know who we'd fight next at middleweight.
There's really, it's either you, like you mentioned, like hang him up, or you go to another organization, or you make this little corny super fight maybe with two old guys, which I don't know who to, what, you're gonna do Whitaker again for the 100th time? Marvin Vittori? Like, there's not really any guys at 185. The Pereira fight's gone. If there was any hope in hell of getting another Pereira fight, the Sean Strickland loss didn't help. The Duplessis loss really didn't help. And now you lose to a guy, nothing against Imavov, but the regular fans probably never heard of this guy. And you lose this weekend on a big card. There's really nowhere to go for him right now, which is sad. But credit him. He's had an unbelievable career. He's a champion forever. They made huge fights with Israel Adesanya in the late 2010s, in the 2020s. I thought he was one of the best fighters in the world when he beat Paulo Costa. I'm like, can it get any better than this? And they really built up Alex Pereira on him as well. He's done a great job for the company, but like you mentioned, I don't know where the hell they go from here with Israel Adesanya. It's kind of no man's land.
You're 1-4 in your last 5.
Mm-hmm.
You should be nowhere near the belt. And they've been trying to give him the belt. They give him, giving him rematches and all this, that you call him deserved, call him undeserved. And he keeps losing. I think he's too far away from the belt to ever have a chance at climbing back to it. And if I know everyone's shopping the Pereira fight right now, but he's just fallen too far to go up another weight class.
I don't know how they promote that. The one thing, though, I mean, sure, you can make big fights down the line. Like, if Conor and Nate Diaz fought now, like, people would still buy and watch that. But obviously, Conor's just another level of fame. But it's like, no one's going to take it seriously if they try and find a way for Izzy to get back into it. They really need to pick some tomato cans if they want to build him up again. But it's just an awkward situation. Do you see him staying at 105 if he fights? Like, there's no way he goes up to 205,
there's
right?
There's no way. I mean, no, he wouldn't go to 205. I think he's going to retire. There's just no reason for him to do that. And he's fallen so far in the middleweight rankings at this point.
Yeah.
To justify, he wouldn't get the title shot at light heavyweight right away. He'd have to fight some pretty scary guys up there. You know, Jamal Hill, Yuri Prohaska.
Blachowicz.
Blachowicz, too.
Who already beat him, yeah.
I don't think he wants anything to do with any of that. Just to go fight Pereira again, who's just on a tear, where you're in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you lose again to Pereira, now not only is your overall record, which he's already losing, now you're losing the UFC record too. At least keep it at 1-1 so you could say, oh, we were even in the UFC.
Yeah, well, phenomenal. I remember when that knockout happened. That shook the whole MMA world up. I would leave with that. Say, hey, why would I want to fight him again? And even after the fight happened, they could have done a mega fight once Pereira won the belt at 205. Mm-hmm. They really could have. Or immediately after, if they did Pereira Adesanya 3 after the Izzy knockout, it's one of the big fights of all time. But, you know, Izzy wasn't going to, he didn't want to do it then for that money. I don't see a world in which he wants to do it now. We're just going to get to a quick break. When we come back, we got obviously some Alex Pereira news. We need your Super Bowl pick as well. It is Super Bowl week. And maybe one of the big super fights in boxing happening in the fall between Canelo Alvarez and Terrence Crawford. We will get into that as well on a hectic day on the Tommy John Show. We'll do a quick ad and we'll come back and preview all that stuff next. Do not go away.
Mark your calendars for an exciting new event from Crossover Comics. Award-winning comic book author Ryan North will be launching his new book, Marvel Comics, One World Under Doom, Number One. You may know Ryan North from many of his other works, including The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Danger and Other Unknown Risks, and The Adventure Time and Star Trek Lower Decks comics, not to mention the legendary Dinosaur comics. The event will take place on February 12th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Crossover Comics, located at 3560 Rue Notre Dame West in Saint-Henri. Fans will also have the opportunity to meet the author, get their comics and books signed, and have a chat with him about his work. For more information, visit us in store or contact us at 514-284-7373.
Hey man, what are you listening to? Is this Weezer? Are you really listening to Weezer right now? It's 2021, bro. Pull up to the castle every Friday at 1, only on CJLO 1690. It's good, I swear.
Here on the Tommy John Show, Super Bowl week, and Connor, before we get into more of the fights, are you a big football guy or like the NFL at all? Or
listen, I'm a Super Bowl watcher.
Okay,
I am as casual it gets as a football fan. I'll watch the Super Bowl because it's the Super Bowl, but outside of that, not really. Obviously, if you give me my pick, probably it's hard to go against Kansas. Kansas City's got it in the bag. I mean, when you talk about the MVPs on that team, the referees have really been there. They're all-star players all season. And I'm a casual. I'm hearing all about this.
Yeah, man. I was going to say, you just say you're not an NFL guy, but even you are hearing about the officials, which I didn't even mention. Didn't even think of it. You're right. You mean last time they played, there was the questionable call at the end that gave the Chiefs the game.
A questionable is being polite. God, I don't know a lot about football, but I know what an incomplete pass looks like. That was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that one. And then obviously in the game against Buffalo, which I think you're mentioning, the Josh Allen got a first down. It looked like we all thought he got the first down. And they marked him short. So at least what I liked that we got from this game, I feel bad it's always at the expense of Buffalo. They lose the coin toss all those years ago. They changed the overtime rules. Now it looks like they're going to put a device in the football, which tells you. We have it in tennis. We have it in all these sports where they know exactly where the ball is on the field. They don't have it in the NFL, who makes money hand over fist, billions upon billions of dollars a year. They finally are, looks like, it's not confirmed, been seeing it. It looks like they're going to put a device in a football, which, thank God, because you need to know where these are crucial calls, and they have no clue where the ball is on these plays. So if they go ahead and put a little device in the ball so we know where the ball is, it's just so I can't believe they hadn't had it for years past, and it looks like finally, and at the expense of the Bills again, we're gonna get some rule changes, which you have to do. The sport has to adapt.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad to see. I mean, you can instill a thing in the ball, but we all have this other thing instilled in us called eyeballs.
Yeah,
and that's true. That's what I was using to make the call. I don't know what the refs were using, but that's what I was going off of.
Yeah,
what my eyes were seeing with that play. See, there's like this line.
Yeah, they give the first down marker, and if the ball
goes over said line, it's a first down. I thought it was pretty standard, but maybe I'm just a casual.
Welcome to watching Chiefs football. Well, welcome to 2025 Chiefs football, especially in the playoffs too. But they're a great team. I understand it. You have to get to that point to be that good. But you're right. Some of the officiating has just been shockingly bad. So, yeah, Canelo Alvarez, Terrence Crawford. That seems like – I know Terrence Crawford's an all-time great. Canelo's an all-time great. He's going up to 168 pounds. I don't know. He's that great. He could pull it off. But Canelo still at this age in his mid-30s is a monster. This has to be money, right? There's no other. I know Terrence Crawford loves saying he's undefeated, but there must have been an offer from the Saudis that he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, you look at the money going into boxing these days. I'll fight Terrence Crawford.
Yeah,
seriously. I don't care to the death. Let's do it. 100 million or whatever they make these days.
Oh, Canelo's definitely as great as Terrence Crawford is. Canelo is still the A side. The Mexican fans love him. It's a god over there. Canelo will make easily over $100 and something million on this fight. So if Terrence Crawford's still going to make at least 70, 60 million, which is crazy. And you think of these big fights in the UFC, they don't make anywhere near as much. Like, and the UFC, as a boxing guy, which I am, I'm not a fool. I know the MMA and the UFC is bigger right now than boxing. And the big stars are still making 10 times more. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of been the biggest problem in MMA for how long now is the fighters don't get paid enough. Mm-hmm. It's just especially when you compare it to boxing, it's just obscene. The pay gap is incredible, especially when you know, in MMA you're looking at, you got to dodge head kicks, elbows, knees, all yep. these things. You know, they got medical bills to pay, man, for these kind of injuries. So they're just making way less,
and they have to pay the coaches too, and the gym time and everything. It's crazy. It's crazy. That's going to be a hell of a fight. We'll preview it all summer. I'd still like, okay, I think Canelo's going to win, but Terrence Crawford, it's going to be fun, which we can knock, obviously, the Saudis for what they're like politically and all those other things, but like they have brought in huge fights. We've got Usyk and Fury twice because of it. We got Anthony Joshua in huge fights. Bivol and Better Biev. The fights we never thought we would see because boxing and these promoters don't want to get them together. Their money is just outrageous, and it's so much so that these fighters can't say no. We've gotten fantastic fights because of it. We'll quickly go back to the UFC. Alex Pereira fighting next month, which he's just on. If you want to talk about all-time runs, he has saved the UFC countless times. Let's be honest. UFC 300, they wanted McGregor. That falls through. Short notice, we'll bring Pereira in. Oh, 303, we don't have a main event. We don't have, bring in Pereira. And he has become a global superstar in North America. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, I know he doesn't technically have the belt, but he is the BMF. Well, without
he
a doubt.
Absolutely
he just steps
is.
In. Knocks people out, walks away, Mishama, all this.
And, yeah.
I don't see how you could bet against him in that fight against Ankalaev.
It was like even money. I couldn't believe it. Maybe I'm not an MMA guy like you. Like, what does Ankalaev bring to the table where a fan like me, who's not as educated, who just thinks Pereira's going to knock him out, where is Vegas going saying this is an even fight? Well, why are they saying that?
I would say Ankalaev can grapple, and that's, you know, traditionally Alex Pereira's weakness is not a lot of grapplers up at light heavyweight. Besides the Jan Blachowicz fight, he hasn't really gone to the ground at all. Mm-hmm. So bringing in a guy like Ankalaev, the fear is, he'll get taken down, and he's not as good at that. But he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like people, like, yes, he's a really good kickboxer. But you can't count out his grappling as well. I mean, obviously, it's not ideal if he goes to the ground. But I think he's much, much better equipped down there than people think he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Ankalaev, you look at, he lost to Paul Craig. Do you know who that is?
Me and my buddies won some money on Paul Craig a few years ago, so we do. But you're right, he's not anywhere near the class of fighter as the Pereiras or even the Jiří Procházkas of the world. Like, he's just not on that level. We have 30 seconds left here on the program. Quickly, are you taking Alex Pereira?
Without a doubt. Free money.
And also, before you go, are we going to get John Jones, Tom Aspinall in our lifetime?
No.
Damn it. I didn't want that answer. So, thank you, Connor, for joining us on the show today. And hope everyone enjoys the Super Bowl and the games this weekend. Next Monday, we will recap the big game and talk about the NHL and the NBA. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening, and we will speak to you all next week.
You are listening.